comforting the afflicted, afflicting the comfortable, bringing faith to the doubtful, doubt to the faithful, friend of the friendless, odor to the odorless, telling lame radio to rise and talk. It's Coast to Coast AM with Ian Punnett. And thank you for another great week of email. Some very lively conversations going on in the email, one of which we'll continue on with our first hour guest, Peter Lance, who's here with some interesting updates on the whole Abel Danger story. Also coming up next hour, Glenn Kimball is back. It's been too long since we've talked to Glenn. And those of you that get the After Dark newsletter know already a little bit about the Colbrin Bible. What is this ancient book? How ancient a book is it really? And what does it have in there that's informative? Or is it just another one of these, you know, concocted collection of stories? Well, Glenn Kimball is an expert on ancient manuscripts. We'll talk about the origin of the Colbrin Bible and that which we can learn from it coming up. It's very interesting material. Just some of the things that we may connect with him on are the origins of the planet, the origins of humankind that are mentioned, the stories that are mentioned in the Colbrin Bible, perhaps some interplanetary visitors in the Colbrin Bible. And again, how old is this book? Glenn Kimball on it about an hour from now. Peter Lance a little bit later on this hour. And we'll talk to him after we do news and email. Crypto news coming up in just a minute. A couple of stories right out of today's headlines. If you haven't been at the coasttocoastam.com website or online, you're going to love what you're going to hear next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. President Bush making crypto news today. You heard he said in his Saturday address that he has personally authorized eavesdropping in the U.S. more than 30 times. This authorization, he said, is a vital tool in our war against terrorists. It is critical to saving American lives. The American people expect me to do everything in my power under our laws and Constitution to protect them and their civil liberties. And that is exactly what I will continue to do as long as I am president of the United States. He was a little feisty today, if you saw it. I don't know if this is going to work. I mean, in the sense that I don't know a lot of conservatives that would love to have a program like this. Certainly, he wasn't winning over any Democrats today. One Democrat said President Bush was acting more like a king than a democratically elected leader. There's a few spy satellites and a few computer programs which none of us know about. I don't think we were supposed to know about this one either. But the launch of some new satellites are coming up in Europe, too. The European Space Agency's Galileo civil navigation system has been delayed. That, according to a story at fizorg.com. That's a great website for science stories. You can get a lot at coasttocoastam.com, and sometimes we get our stories from them, too. But this is something for the European version of the global positioning system. The trick on this is that to secure the rights to the radio frequencies that they want to use, this project must launch in early 2006 or they'll lose it. So if they lose the rights to the radio satellite frequencies, then all Russians and people in Europe will not get GPS. But they will get Howard Stern, I think. That'll be interesting. The next wave in electronics could be wavy electronics, according to a story there, too, also at fizorg, physorg.com. Researchers at the University of Illinois, my alma mater, have developed a fully stretchable form of single crystal silicon with micron-sized wave-like geometries that can be used to build high-performance electronic devices on rubber and in fabric. So they can make electronics inside of bendable fabrics. Pretty cool, and especially the rubber substrate part. Truly software that they're working to build into soft clothes. Japan will budget $215 billion over the next 5 years to maintain their reputation as a scientific powerhouse, amid fears that Japan is losing the technological edge. We have got to invest in this country if we think that we are ever going to compete. $215 billion over the next 5 years is what they're going to do. But at the same time, they're using some other funds in a joint project with the U.S. to dig deeper into the Earth's surface than ever before. There's going to be a breakthrough in detecting earthquakes, they say, with the new system called Chikyu. That's from a Japanese word meaning earth. Chikyu. It's a deep sea drilling vessel. And it's made a port call after ending its first training mission at sea at a cost of $500 million. It's a 57-ton vessel, and it's scheduled to embark in 2007 on a voyage to collect the first samples of the Earth's core. The project, led by Japan and the United States with the participation of China and the European Union, seeks clues on the primitive organisms that were the forerunners of life and on tectonic plates, of course, that cause earthquakes. You know, I'm assuming they're going to find a way to detect earthquakes, but they're going down pretty deep, and it seems like a fine line between detecting and causing. I hope they know what they're doing. America's seven-time Tour de France champion Lance Armstrong is alleging a conspiracy. And he's saying that a newspaper has orchestrated a kind of witch hunt, faking evidence, publishing claims that he tested positive for a blood booster during a period of time when he was competing, obviously, for the Tour de France. The paper has no proof whatsoever. Armstrong said it is a witch hunt and a publicity exercise, although the French people, by and large, still love Lance Armstrong. I saw not too long ago that Julia Roberts was voted the most popular American woman, and Lance Armstrong still the most popular American guy, or American Guy, I guess they would call him. And by the way, speaking of France, the story doesn't really have much to do with anything, and there's really good stuff at coasttocoastam.com, but I just had to pass along this story about Mariah Carey. I don't know if it's true. Singer Mariah Carey, though, was in France, and she was trying to impress the waiters by speaking their language. So she learned an expression that was supposed to mean, "That meal was wonderful, I'll have to come here again." The phrase in French is, and I'll do the best I can with it, "Ce repas était si excitant que je me suis fait dessus." And it was supposed to mean, "That meal was wonderful, I'll have to come here again." But what a friend had actually told her to say to the waiter was, "That meal was so thrilling, I've just wet myself." And I don't know who that person is, but they're my new hero. I'm sure there are a few tasty Canadians listening tonight that would correct my French pronunciation. I heard a lot of very interesting email from Canada and from the United States last week. I've got a lot of it here about Riley Martin, our guest from last week. He said, this is Reptoid who says, "You were asked tonight about reptilians, and you didn't know for sure quite what to say other than what the general fear-based, phobic, non-experiencer public thought, or were told to think, about this diverse and incredibly dynamic and complex situation. Ian, there's more than one race out there and down here that could be interpreted as reptilian or reptoids, and that alone should help you deal with callers better in this area. Want to know more? Want some evidence?" And he gave me a website here. He says he's known many reptoid people, and he's done a lot of reptoid researching since he was a young man when he came out of the ET closet back in the 1980s after some intense encounters as a teen. And the website he gave was COHRA, COHRA.org, COHRA.org. It's where many of us reptoid researchers are at now. Love from all of us hybrids out there. It was a great email from Dick, who said he's been listening to Coast for many years, and he was listening to the conversation with Riley Martin, and he had this question. He said, "Where's the physical proof that the abductors, who say people who say they were abducted, how come they don't come back with a book like the Holy Bible or something, so people of the world can see that they know something without a doubt, that there are aliens amongst us. Well, we'll talk about another kind of Bible coming up next hour, the Colbrin Bible with Glenn Kimball. Also on the subject of Riley Martin, Joey wrote to say, I actually believe him, but his book is too expensive. I wish he would have been more understanding of your pun et ing, though, he said. And Joey says, I prefer the term Judo-Christian, actually, because we're always getting cooked around, always getting kicked around. Woof, woof. Thank you, Joey. Sorry, I blew your line. Mark wrote about Riley Martin last week. He said, when I saw that Riley Martin was scheduled to be on your show, I threw the lawn chair in the truck and drove to the rail yard to watch the pending train wreck. I thought it was fun. He said, by the way, very WWAD, what would Art do? As for the bumper music, he says, crank it up. Let him wake up and then fall back to sleep. Always nice to hear from a colleague. Thank you, Mark. Of course, Ted doesn't agree. Ted says, on comments about 9/11 that I made last week, he said 9/11 was a demolition whitewash. The answer is the war agenda. You don't have a night voice, and I am no fan of the gay Art Bell. You know, I'll accept with grace the accusation that I have a ferret face. I acknowledge that I might be more popular if I had facial hair like Art and George. And I welcomed the photoshopped galleries, the three of them, of those bearded Ian photos. But we will not be having Ian is the gay Art Bell Photoshop contest. That's just one. We'll let it hang out there. But thank you, Ted, nonetheless. Jenny wrote to say that last bit on the show, when you spoke to a woman about tolerance, that was really something. I really enjoyed that. Well, thank you, Jenny. I got a lot of email about that last caller. I won't go back into it again, except just to say, amazing how little faith that many people have in Christians not to be dorks. So I always try to do my part to reverse that impression whenever possible. But fortunately, the people who come before me have lowered the bar so dramatically that it's not that hard. Very interesting email from Kane about Dr. T. Colin Campbell talking about milk a few weeks ago. And I just had to pass this along. She said, I thought I heard you say something about cow's milk being associated with acne. She said, I had severe adult acne until I was 35 years old. She gave up on milk and it got better. She said, I was treated like dirt for a long time. I was required to take drug tests while applying for entry-level clerical jobs. People assumed I was a drug addict or a prostitute because of the adult acne. For a long time, I didn't even know what I was supposed to look like. Bad, painful, systemic infection appeared almost anywhere on my body. I had some repair done in the mid-80s, but my skin is still primarily scar tissue. I can't believe what has happened. I can't begin to describe to you what it did to my life. And she's off the cow's milk, she says. Let me tell you, it's a factor. It ain't about VD, drugs, lack of cleanliness, or eating too many French fries. And that's from Kane. And thank you. One guy wrote to say, I don't know if you know about this, but soy milk is bad for me too. So that's dangerous to some people. And before it's over, I'm going to be drinking his water and eating vitamins. Wade wrote to say, there is video of the plane hitting the Pentagon, and it was broadcast on a TV newscast. I saw the surveillance video myself. It was a plane. It was a plane. It was a plane. Guess what? It was a plane, says Wade. And we'll pick that up, that thought here in just a second, too, with our guest, Peter Lance, in just a minute. Deborah wrote to say that really one of the best holiday stories, and I'm going to save this for later. I'll end the show on this story from Deborah about what happened to her after she was listening to Coast to Coast last week. And I'll just end the show on that as a little, well, as a little greeting card, because I'll be off next week and hope you all have a fabulous Christmas Eve if that's what you're celebrating, or for that matter, too, Happy Hanukkah, starting almost at the same time. A lot of people commenting on the number of the beast. There's one claim here from Richard. We were talking about the difference between 666 or 616. 616 seems to be the earliest now known text, and it says 616 and not 666. He said, I believe 666 is William H. Gates. When his name is converted to ASC coding, the language with which every keyboard communicates with any computer, the numbers of his name add up to 666. Same claim is made about Ronald Reagan from somebody, Van Damme, who says Ronald Wilson Reagan, six letters, six letters, six letters. Columbia Christian College, says one person, CCC. Maybe that's what it is. Other people point out CCC also stands for Clear Channel Communications, but I'm sure that's just a coincidence. And Carl wrote to me with the number of the beast, he says. It was an 11-digit number beginning with 1, and it had parentheses in there, and it looked a lot like a phone number. So, Carl, I called the number of the beast you sent me. A woman answered the phone. Sounded like she was in her late 50s, maybe. I asked her whether Carl was there. She said, not on your life, and slammed down the phone. So, Carl, I don't know whether that's an ex-wife or a mother-in-law, but not that number and not that beast. Thank you, everybody, for writing. You're always welcome to. I'll try to get caught up during this holiday break on the way. Again, I'll be off on New Year's Eve, too, as Art Bell will be in doing the annual prediction show, and that'll be fun. But I have to save as much time as I can for Peter Lance, because the work he's doing, while always interesting, is particularly pertinent this week. Peter Lance, 5-time Emmy-winning investigative reporter, now working as a screenwriter and a novelist. You'll remember him from ABC News and frequent appearances here on Coast to Coast AM. And good evening, Peter.
Hey, Ian. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much for trying to fit into the time that we have allowed.
Absolutely. No problem. I'm here.
I know we could do 2 whole shows with you, and I look forward to the opportunity to do that coming up. You know, let me just pick up with something last week, and then we'll get to more after the break. But, you know, there does seem to be still a lot of discussion about whether or not 9/11 was faked, the Pentagon in particular. Some people claim that, you know, you couldn't have got a plane in there, that there's no physical evidence to prove that it happened. Help me with that.
I don't want to get into the old Alex Jones debate, because I got in June we had a real slugfest with George on that. But the truth is, I'm a mainstream journalist, ABC News investigative reporter, and I've got a law degree, and I spent 4.5 years looking at the government's failures on the road to 9/11. That's my specific area of expertise, the Justice Department and the FBI. And there are so many outrageous examples of government misconduct, ranging from negligence to gross negligence to what I now believe is obstruction of justice, where people should go to jail for not connecting dots, that I think this whole dialogue about the government faking 9/11 and the plane didn't hit the Pentagon is just so specious, and it wastes so much time. There is so much that we should really be worried about, Ian, with people today in positions of power in the FBI and the Justice Department that have continued to put us at risk, that this other discussion it distracts people in power from focusing on the truth. And for the first time, this Able Danger scandal now has united people like Ollie North on the right and the Jersey girls who campaigned for Kerry on the left, you know, the widows who really helped the 9/11 commission be set up, to get a true, fair, honest, and open investigation, because the 9/11 commission did a whitewash. It was the Warren Commission of our day. And this Able Danger scandal proves it, and in particular, I can get into specifics, but I just think it really distracts. It takes the eye of the public off the ball, and it diffuses what we should be focusing a laser point of outrage so that people get in the streets and get a new investigation that's going to be truly independent. And when you go into the whole, you know, shadow government Alex Jones world, you let the air out of the balloon, in my opinion.
Well, I'm totally good with that. I mean, I tend to believe the people that said what they saw, and I know that there are families who have victims that they've never gotten back, and that were on that plane, that seemed to prove enough for me. But just in 30 seconds, though, that as an award-winning investigative reporter, you're fully satisfied that a plane hit the Pentagon.
I'm fully satisfied till I see evidence otherwise. You know, there are like 1,400 families that didn't get anything back from the Twin Towers, you know. There was such a fragmentation and of the bodies in that event that there are almost 1,400 people that weren't buried there. So just because people didn't get body parts back, doesn't mean that a plane didn't hit the Pentagon. And
we'll just have to hang on to that thought, because we'll come back and I want to know more. We'll get down to cases and the latest on Able Danger next on Coast to Coast AM. You know, Peter Lance has done so much good work in this whole Able Danger story, and it's growing. And the proof was just what he said there before the bottom of the hour, talking about how it's gotten to a point where he believes there should be some indictments, that the ignorance of the warning signs is so inexcusable that it's become criminal. And if you haven't caught up to date on this, if you aren't convinced yet that the 9/11 commission was sort of like, you know, today's Warren Commission, then you got to hear what Peter Lance has to say next on Coast to Coast AM. I've spent a little time hearing Peter Lance and on his website at peterlance.com. But let me ask you, if you would, just to bring people up to date who haven't heard about it, just what, you know, Able Danger is coded for.
Okay, and there was, beginning in December of 1999, the Special Operations Command, Army SOCOM, with the permission and encouragement of General Hugh Shelton, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time, tasked kind of an elite unit at Fort Belvoir, Virginia, called LEWA, which stands for Land Intelligence Warfare Activity, to do what they call a data mining exercise to investigate Al-Qaeda, to try and connect the dots on Al-Qaeda. And this was actually not just an intelligence operation, but it was operational in the sense that they were going to try and go out and target Al-Qaeda members and actually take them out below the level of bin Laden. And so the concept of data mining is pretty simple. What it is picture massive search engines, like they call them spiders, and they'll put a term in like Al-Qaeda, or let's just say more specifically, Blind Sheikh Omar Abdel-Rahman, who, as I've said in my two books, is the key to the 9/11 stories. Was beloved by bin Laden, Egyptian cleric, and it runs like a hot circuit cable from the 12 years of the story prior to 9/11. So they go after Sheikh Rahman, and they take any open source material, a phone bill from when he was in the mosque in New York, material from court cases, bank accounts, insurance records, and they also, I'm sure, included classified material, although they haven't admitted that. And they basically run these search engines, and they look for connections. And then let's say they find a phone bill with Abdel-Rahman, then they do the same thing for every name on the phone bill. So quickly what you have is a geometric kind of version of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, okay?
Right.
6 degrees of Al-Qaeda. You quickly, geometrically, if the thing ran long enough, you'd have the entire human race in it. But, you know, they ran it for, it was intended to be run for a six-month period. And what happens is you then begin to draw these links. Then once they get the material, they then have these really high-end programs. One is called Starlight, another one is called Parentage, and they begin to assess the significance of the connections, and then they graphically illustrate them using a high-end program called Analyst Notebook, and they create what are called link charts. Now, if people go to my website, peterlance.com, and they click on Able Danger, they'll scroll down and they'll see a link chart that I actually had in both of my books, the first one in September of 2003, that actually was done by one of the same men that did some of the Able Danger link charts. And that just looks like a two-dimensional chart with pictures. But what that proves and the one that I had in my book, and what Able, what the evidence that surfaced recently from people connected with Able Danger, what it proves, Ian, is something that defies the conclusion of the 9/11 Commission. And the conclusion of the 9/11 Commission was that the origin of the plot, the planes as missiles plot, began in 1996 in Afghanistan, and that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged mastermind, was not a member of Al-Qaeda at the time, and he just kind of thought of this thing. He was kind of a freelancer, hadn't seen bin Laden in years, happened to meet him and kind of pitched this plot to bin Laden in 96. Well, that is absolutely untrue. I've proven in both of my books that the plot originated in the fall of 94 in Manila with Ramzi Youssef, the nephew of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He was a genius, a criminal genius. He's the original designer of the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, and he conceived the planes as missiles plot. In fact, as early as 94 into 95, January, they had seven targets, including the Trade Center, the Pentagon, the White House, a nuclear facility, CIA headquarters, the Sears and Transamerica towers, and they had up to 10 men training in U.S. flight schools. I prove this in my book, and the FBI in 2.5 years hasn't laid a glove on me, hasn't challenged a single fact.
Right.
And cut to the chase, the 9/11 Commission, however, in order to remove Youssef from the plot, they moved the plot forward 2 years solely on the word of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, which is like taking the word of David Berkowitz from when he did the first Son of Sam murder.
Okay? Right.
So now, what happens? The 9/11 Commission has this preconceived scenario with Democrats and Republicans, by the way, on both sides. Already, when they impaneled that commission, they decided they were going to tell the public only a part of the story. They were going to titillate people, and there are some startling revelations in that final report, but it gives a certain percentage of the story, and it also distorts the story. So why? You have to say why. Why would they do this? Because there were significant blunders across three administrations, Bush 41, 8 years of Clinton, and Bush 43, specifically on the day of. Next to the active negligence, intelligence leading up to 9/11, which is the greatest intelligence failure since the Trojan horse, the day of 9/11 was the greatest defense failure in American history. And so what they decided to do was, in order to remove embarrassment from Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush and the current President Bush, they were going to do a kind of sanitized, provocative but limited version of the story that would find no one accountable. That was another agreement. And because I prove in my book the FBI's New York office, which is the Bin Laden office of origin, could have stopped Youssef in 92 when Bush Sr. was in the White House, they didn't want that to come out. So they only focused on the last couple of years, and they pushed the plot forward. Now, lo and behold, we find out the 9/11 Commission Philip Zelikow, the executive director, a crony of Condi Rice, he'd written a book with her, he's in Afghanistan when this Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, Bronze Star winner, 22-year veteran, the best of the best, he approaches him and tells him that he was part of this Army unit, and he does it with the permission of his general, by the way. He's not telling tales out of school. And he responded to a request by the 9/11 Commission for any information. He said, oh, yeah, we were really doing this data mining, and we found links between Atta, the lead hijacker, and the cell of Blind Sheikh Rahman in New York, which is also the Youssef cell. And like the 9/11 Commission people, staff people, their jaws, what are you saying? Because they were going to write a report that said Atta was only in the country like a year later. So Zelikow calls that night, wakes people up in the East, find out what you can on this, and he encourages Schaefer, as soon as he gets back stateside, to contact the commission. Tony gets back in January, makes a call, call back. The second phone call, they say, we're not interested, we've already investigated this, and there's nothing to it. Tony is stunned because they haven't even gotten the information from the Pentagon on Able Danger at that point. Then he suddenly, his security clearance is pulled. He had kept a lot of the Able Danger documentation in his office, and now he can't get in his office, and all of that stuff was removed. He later finds out that thousands, like 2.5 terabytes of data, equal to 12% of the books in the Library of Congress, were destroyed, and there's some question as to when that happened, but it appears to have happened in the year 2000 in the spring. And then another member of Able Danger, Scott Philpott, a Navy captain who was about to take command of an Aegis cruiser. That's you know, both these guys are the best of the best. They're reliable. He goes and talks to Dietrich Snell, the investigator on the 9/11 commission in charge of the origin of the plot, in mid-July. He tells him effectively the same thing that Tony did, and Snell basically blows him off, okay? So the reason being, nobody wants any information that there's a cell existing in New York continuing since the World Trade Center bombing, that there's any connection between 9/11, between essentially the two attacks on the Trade Center. Nobody on the 9/11 Commission wants to admit that they're connected. And here's this kind of secret Army intelligence operation that's like a wooden shoe in the machine of the 9/11 Commission.
Sure. Just to go back a second, say perhaps because they are, you know, devout Muslims, we should say 6 degrees have never had bacon. Just a thought. But what's interesting about this to me then is the motivation is what? To try to save our international reputation, to not make us look so flat-footed?
No.
Why?
Why? It's the oldest motivation in government. Cover your blank.
I get the CYA, but I mean, so it's CYA, but why?
Look. Here's the thing, and this is where I say you don't have to come up with a theory that a plane didn't go into the Pentagon to find enough evidence to put people in jail that worked in our government and our intelligence agencies. Here's what I'm getting at. At a certain point, in my first book, I document negligence, gross negligence by the FBI in the Southern District of New York, the U.S. Attorney's Office. Then I'm now working, I did a second book on the 9/11 Commission, which got to the point of what I felt was criminal negligence. Now I'm doing a third book for HarperCollins, and I believe, Ian, that there were affirmative acts of cover-up amounting to obstruction of justice. They intentionally disconnected the dots because they knew that as early as 1989 in the summer, they had the original World Trade Center bombing cell, the Blind Sheikh Youssef cell, on the radar. The FBI surveilled them over 4 weekends during Bush Sr.'s administration. They could have stopped Youssef in 92 before the first bombing. They got evidence from the Philippines in 1995, all the details I told you about this planes operation, and they ignored it. They kept secret the hunt for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed for 2 years. They secretly indicted him in 96. Why? Because they lost him twice, once in Islamabad the day Youssef was captured. He gives an interview, hangs around long enough to talk to a stringer for Time magazine in the LA Times with it, giving his own name, and the FBI shows up late and misses him. A year later, they find out he's in Doha, Qatar. They go there with the hostage rescue team, the elite unit, the FBI unit, and they cool their heels while he's spirited out of the country. So they have egg on their face. They look like idiots.
Okay, but again, I'm with you. They look dumb, but I mean, I guess here's my point, since I respect your journalist perspective on this, I just want to ask you, is this a case of where they want a 9/11-like attack, as some people would allege, that this is so overt, that this is so intentional, that they are laying out a kind of a red carpet for an attack on the United States, or is this just, it just shows how perhaps it shows a lack of acuity on the part of the very same people who, you know, we trust and we turn to and supposedly the world respects for being so good, like the CIA or the NSA or these other organizations. And we are afraid of looking stupid, so we'd rather cover it up than admit, hey, we look pretty stupid.
Well, I think that to make an argument, the Alex Jones theory of the shadow government causing 9/11 to get to Middle East oil, okay?
Right.
You'd have to include, you could say, okay, Bush 41 is in on it because he's the father of this current president. But then you have 8 years of Bill Clinton, and you'd have to include Bill Clinton from Arkansas, the Rhodes Scholar, in this conspiracy. It just doesn't make sense. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't believe that once they that 9/11 happened, that they didn't shamelessly exploit that incident as an excuse to invade, and that they weren't poised to go into Iraq immediately, and that it didn't benefit Halliburton. I think it's all outrageous, and I frankly think both the president and the vice president should be impeached. I absolutely feel that way, and I'm a mainstream journalist, okay? But I don't believe that there was this insidious, that there's a secret unit that, you know, here's the problem. I've worked as a screenwriter in Hollywood. And Hollywood, as you know, lauds the FBI and the CIA. They raise them to levels of competence that is extraordinary. Look at The
right.
Recruit. Movies like that. I mean, they make these guys look like they're so good that they can see anybody, anytime, target anybody. And the fact of the matter is, what truly saves civil liberties is that, you know, the balance is that these big five intelligence agencies don't talk to each other. They're tremendously territorial. It's what saved us from a greater onslaught in the Islamic world, that the tribes fight with each other over there all the time. You know, things would have been a lot worse for us. These agencies compete constantly. And when Congressman Weldon, I want to say something, this Republican congressman, very conservative, but a true patriot. I really believe this guy that really cares. And he's the guy that's been spearheading Able Danger. He had done an intelligence initiative in 1999 during the Milosevic situation. And, you know, at the time, Milosevic had three U.S. POWs. Clinton was about to bomb Belgrade, and this congressman took five Democrats, five Republicans over there to try and figure out a peaceful solution. And he asked George Tenet of the CIA to give him some information on a particular Serbian named Crick or Karic, who was key to the negotiations, right? Well, Tenet calls him back and gives him like two lines, nothing, okay? He then goes to this land, Liwa, the Fort Belvoir unit, which he had helped to fund, and they give him 8 to 10 pages, like where the guy lives, what apartment building Milosevic lives in that this guy owns, how their wives socialize, banking information, incredible information. After he comes back, the Congress people are so floored with this information that the two CIA agents and two FBI agents rush to Weldon's office to be debriefed. And he tells them about Liwa, and they go, what's Liwa? So the FBI and the CIA didn't even know what the capability was of this operation. And it was cheap, inexpensive, and incredibly effective, okay? And so what I'm trying to tell you is the idea that somehow 9/11 was caused by our government totally underestimates the enemy that we face. It's almost racist.
I get that. I think that's a fair argument, and I'll go along with that. Could it be more like then that the reason why they're working so hard to cover it up is that it the more we had options and the more we had signals and the more we had opportunities to keep it from happening, but we didn't, the less sympathetic we look, the less we look like victims of an attack and more like a company, you know, a nation that was asking for it.
I think it's, you know what it is, Ian? Honest to God, I've been a reporter for 35 years, and I'm a good judge of human nature, and I've worked in a corporate environment at ABC News, which is like a shark pit, okay?
Right.
Shark pool.
Right.
I can tell you, nobody likes to be wrong. And,
right.
And people in these intelligence agencies who are, it's a $44 billion a year. That's how much the U.S. taxpayers are shelling out for intelligence to prevent harm, risk, okay? And the idea that they were culpable, that they have blood on their hands, that they could have stopped 9/11 years ago by just doing their jobs. It wasn't a failure of imagination, as the commission said, nor was it a failure of systems. It was a failure of individuals in the system. And also, we didn't need the Patriot Act. We did not need the Patriot Act. We didn't need a dollar more spent on intelligence. We just needed people to do their jobs and to not try and shape intelligence for some political expediency, which is what constantly happens.
You know, part of that story about, is it Ramses Youssef, the guy from the Philippines?
Well, he's a Baluchistani. He was the first Trade Center bomber. Yeah, go ahead.
But that was the guy from the Philippines who, because we had that story that came out after 9/11, and they said, hey, there were people there that were trying to say, this guy has plans about crashing into the World Trade Center, and this guy really looked like he could pull it off. And so it got a little, you know, play at the time, but it never really got traction then, did it?
You know what happened? I'll tell you how I did my first book. This is the truth, okay? I had been actually working on a movie about Youssef for Showtime, a movie just about the first Trade Center bombing. And I read the entire 6,000-page transcript of the Bojinka trial. He was tried twice. First, for a plot to smuggle these little devices on the first leg of a two-leg hop, a non-suicide plot to blow up 12 jumbo jets. And the second time he was tried for the Trade Center bombing, right? Well, when Youssef was arrested in 95, they had a fire in their bomb factory in Manila, and he fled to the Islamabad, and he's captured a month later purely as a result of a tip to a rewards program. A young Islamic dropped a dime on him. He goes back, and he's in this Bojinka case, it says his partner, Abdul Hakim Murad, had been to four U.S. flight schools. All right? And I go, wait a minute. Right after 9/11, I said, wait a second. you don't have to go to a flight school to get a smuggle, you know, components of a bomb on a plane, assemble it, and get off on the next leg, right? You don't have to be a pilot. Could there be a connection? So you know what I did? I started kicking over rocks. I went to the Philippines. I interviewed Colonel Rodolfo Mendoza, the chief interrogator of Murad, because they had captured Murad and they had him for 67 days. He gave me everything, Ian. He gave me the whole thing. And you know what he said? He said, right after 9/11, we told all the people, and then we started getting calls from the U.S., we're going to cut your aid. You better shut up. You better not tell anybody that, you know, we had prior knowledge of this, okay? And there were people in the Philippines to this day, senior people who are living in fear, have been threatened so my new book is going to establish once and for all absolute definitive proof that the FBI and the Justice Department had evidence of the specific planes as missiles plot, not this little plot to fly a plane right into the CIA, which were bandied around for years, but the true full-blown 9/11 plot was known in January to the FBI, Legat, and the U.S. Embassy in January of 95.
Well, that's where we'll have to stay for now, but you know we'll have you back in January of 06 or as soon as we can.
I'd be happy to be back.
And thank you. Get to work and finish that book. PeterLance.com for more updates. Fortunately, his story is getting traction all over. Thank you, Abel Danger.